Are you an EMDR therapist and parent who wants to make more money, have more time with your family, and get better results with your clients? Welcome to the Future Template Parent Podcast. I'm your host, Carolyn Solo, LCSW, EMDR consultant, business coach, and mom of three kids under seven. I realized that the grind of weekly sessions was taking a massive toll on my ability to be the kind of parent and therapist I wanted to be. So I dove headfirst into learning about intensives. I read all the books and articles and did all the trainings. Now I've transformed my schedule, my income, and my clinical outcomes by offering intensive EMDR in my practice. I want to teach you how to do this too, so you can build a practice you love and spend more quality time with your family. Let's create the future template for your life as a parent and as a therapist. Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 44 of the Future Template Parent Podcast. I'm your host, Carolyn Solo, LCSW, soon to be Dr. Carolyn Solo, LCSW PhD. I just can't stop saying that because it's very exciting. I'm an EMDR therapist. I'm a mom of three daughters. Thank you for joining me today. Today's episode is going to be a bit more topical, a bit more EMDR focused after last week's life update. Today I'm going to talk about going all the way back in an EMDR intensive. What do I mean? Not just sticking to the traumatic episode, that is. So first, because you know, you guys have probably heard me in earlier episodes talk about how I use RTEP, the recent traumatic event protocol, in an intensive. And so what happens when you need to go further back than recent, right? So I'll talk a little bit about what RTEP is, a little refresher on it, and then why going all the way back to a feeder or core memory can be a useful thing to do in an intensive, and then an example when I've done so. So let's get into it. So what is the recent traumatic event protocol, also known as RTEP? So if you really want a full, primer on RTEP, you should go back to episode 8 of the pod, which is, interestingly, I have noticed is by far the most downloaded episode of the podcast. So certainly people are interested in it. So if you want to know more about RTEP in general and like how to do it, how I do it, all that stuff, go back to episode 8. But just a little quick review about what RTEP is and when I use it or how you can use it. So it's in its inception, RTEP is a comprehensive current trauma focused protocol initially developed for EMDR early intervention, so like soon after the episode, and extends in its sort of original conceptualization, kind of looked at the EMD protocol, right? So just desensitization, not the R of reprocessing, and the recent event protocol together. So there was I forget what the other version of RTEP is called. I don't know. The recent event protocol. But anyway, basically EMDR RTEP is taking EMD and then the recent event protocol and sort of putting them together, adding a few additional measures for containment, for safety, a few different pieces to it. And EMDR RTEP, in its initial conceptualization, usually requires 2 to 4 sessions, which can optionally be conducted on successive days. So you can see why I think of it as a really good model for the intensive, because there's that like, let's do it close together, let's do a lot all at once. So when we're talking about RTEP, we have the T, the traumatic episode, which is the original traumatic incident together with the aftermath. So how it's continuing up until the present, and you'll have heard me talk about that before. So like there's an ongoing continuum, the original experience is not yet adaptively processed, and there's still impacts in the present day. There's multiple targets of disturbance, and you go through each one and process each one individually, all the way from where the incident began until, as I will say to clients, up until you've been sitting in this chair in my office today, right? So the first part of it is you have someone tell the traumatic episode out loud, the episode narrative, while they're doing continuous BLS. That helps to ground them and to contain affect while they're doing it. And it also starts to process some and helps them start to integrate the gaps of the traumatic memory. We don't go in incredible detail into recounting the bits of the trauma, but that is part of the initial process. And as you can see, that's different than kind of standard protocol. You can use a distancing metaphor, like having it on a TV screen, a remote to turn it on and off. If you're worried about the person getting too activated, if you need more containment, then you have the Google search is another part of it, where you're scanning the entire traumatic episode for points of disturbance. And that helps us come up with the targets that we're going to use. And then you have focused processing, where you process each point of disturbance and you limit the range of associations to that point of disturbance. So as you can see, you're not going all the way back to reprocess. You can do a little bit of like wider focus processing if you want. And this is really considered EMD little R. And that also happens quite frequently when you're doing RTEP. So as you can see with RTEP, and again, go back to episode 8 to hear all the details about RTEP. We're talking about EMD and EMD little R. Okay, with EMD little R, you are making some connections to adaptive material. You're using the AIP model. You're not just saying, let's reduce the disturbance around the memory, the point of disturbance. Let's actually, you know, see if we can connect to some adaptive material. And then EMD big R, as we know, is going all the way back. You're doing your float back. You're finding the channels that are like the earliest possible ones to try to get out every little bit of stuff. Now, often I will tell people when I'm doing an intensive, we're not going to get out all of your early life trauma. We're focusing on this particular theme. That's why you're here. But sometimes we need to do more open processing. Like we need to go further back, right? It might change what actually gets accomplished in the intensive. We might not get as, quote, far in the RTEP necessarily, but it can often make a big difference, right? So if there's a blocking memory that's making it really hard to make progress in the RTEP if you don't process it, you might have to go there, right? It might just feel like we are looping, we're stuck, the SUD isn't going down for this point of disturbance. If you've tried a whole bunch of different interweaves, if you've tried a parts work interweave, perhaps, maybe the part seems very young and you're like, okay, there's more going on here. Maybe you've tried all the tricks in the book that you have and you're like, okay, something is not moving. Maybe there's a really significant blocking memory that you do need to engage with some, right? And of course, you're going to always ask for the client to sign on to this, right? There's going to be, consent, autonomy, always, right? But so how do you find a blocking memory if you're suspecting it? What I often do is I'll do a float back, right? And remember, you can do a float back at any time. Float backs don't just happen in phase one. I guess technically in standard protocol, a float back is in phase one, right? If you're sensing there's a blocking memory and you don't know what it is and the client doesn't know what it is, you're going to have to do a float back if you want to get to it, right? So I will often use the question of when did you first learn this? Because often I'll notice that if they're circling with a specific point of disturbance, there's also likely a certain negative cognition that's coming up over and over again that they're kind of circling around, right? And that negative cognition is probably related to that memory where things are not, the SUD is not going down, the point of disturbance. So I'll say, okay, so this seems really important, this belief that like I'm worthless, right? It feels very related, but we're still not seeing any movement. Let's just float back in time. Let your mind and body float back in time. And let me know, when do you feel like you first learned this to be true about yourself? And, you know, even if first feels like a lot, if they're like, well, I don't know the first time, you can say, what's an early memory that you can access, right? And you give them some time to go back as far as they feel like they can, you know, give space for them to kind of let the process happen and see how early they can go. But like, it doesn't have to be like, oh, you're 8 years old. That's not early enough. Let's keep going, right? Sometimes even just having the client see how those, like the current point of disturbance that they're working on and this earlier memory, how they're connected, sometimes that can even like bring the SUD down just a little bit or even more. It's kind of a longer cognitive interweave when you're doing that, right? You're helping them see this is not just something that came out of nowhere in response to this particular thing that happened, this particular trauma, right? There are other reasons
why this is coming up for you, and we need to address those. And so that can be really helpful. And that's, I mean, it's not that hard. You know how to do a float back, right? Like, I think you can find that memory or something that will, that feels relevant pretty easily. I just want you, you know, make sure you're going slowly, make sure you're getting a lot of consent, making sure you're like explaining to the client why you're doing this. But usually I found people are open to it. Of course, if you're starting to feel like there's dissociation happening, if you're starting to feel like if there's a younger part coming out, or if they're starting to like seem ungrounded, start to ground, bring them back to the present, maybe check in, be like, wow, that seemed really hard. Does this feel okay? What do you think was happening there? Let's notice you're in the room. Let's reestablish safety. You know, all those things you would normally do. You don't have to go there. If it feels like it's not going to be productive, that's okay. You can contain it. You can make a note for them to work with this on an hour, like a, with their hourly EMDR therapist in the future. Maybe it's something they do a different intensive on, whatever. Like, you just always want to ask for consent, because they might not want to go there. It might feel too big, too scary, too ungrounding. And it's maybe a total surprise to them that this is coming up when they came to you for something different, right? So of course we want to ask for consent, and we always want to make sure the client is ready to go there. But sometimes they are. And you know, you always are going to use your clinical judgment. If they say, yeah, I'm ready for that, but you're seeing a lot of decompensation start to happen, you know, safety is always your priority, right? At any time, we can use resourcing with a client to show them that they can reestablish bodily somatic safety in the present. That's a really useful intervention. So don't feel like you've done something horribly wrong. Just remember, like, wow, I am teaching them to attune to their body and to come back to themselves when they're feeling ungrounded. What an amazing thing, right? I was talking about dissociation in class this past week to my students, and the thing I always tell everyone, students, consultees, myself, if a client dissociates in your office, that means that they dissociate in their everyday lives as well, and they get through it. They will get through it in your office too. Harm happens with dissociation in therapy when the therapist doesn't acknowledge it. The therapist doesn't take responsibility for their role in how this all happened. The therapist doesn't provide skills for the client to feel regrounded and safe. Like, you don't just ignore that it happened. That's when EMDR can do harm for clients who are dissociative. But if you're careful, if you're attuned, if you always make sure you're creating safety, it's okay. They have this experience in everyday life. The experience of having someone attuned to it and help them feel safe again, that does not happen to them in their everyday lives. So that's a really healing experience you provide for them. And you give them some confidence of like, there are ways to move through this. So you all know how much I love talking about dissociation, just a little sidebar there. Back to the main point. But, you know, of course, safety is so important when you're thinking EMD big R, or anytime. But, you know, EMD big R is often where we start to freak out about, oh no, is this going to be too much, right? So like I said, you can always contain it. You can always say, wow, this seems really important, but it seems like maybe now is not the time. Let's just note that. You could come back to it with another therapist. We could talk about doing another intensive, whatever. But, you know, you've still uncovered something really valuable, even if they don't want to process the memory. But okay, so how about an example of when I have done this? So recently, I was working with a client who, we were doing an intensive. She had suffered a sexual assault while she was traveling. And it was, she was not someone who had had very many sexual experiences. So it was, I mean, it was traumatic. It's always traumatic. Sexual assault is incredibly traumatic. But this client, sex was a frightening process to her already anyway, because she hadn't experienced it. And the narrative she had heard growing up was how, you know, sex before marriage is bad and you're bad if you do it and all these things. And so there was a lot tied up for her in that as well. So it was a really triggering event on a lot of fronts. So we were proceeding, you know, carefully, slowly, making good progress. But then we just started to circle and circle and circle. And she kept feeling like, this is my fault. I don't deserve help. We were really stuck on that particular cognition. And so thanks to the workbook and my intake, which, you know, I've talked about in other episodes, I had some sense of what could be going on in terms of family history. She had a history of some like physical and emotional abuse and neglect from especially her father, but both parents. And some family stuff had kind of peaked through at different moments here and there. something about the age of the person who assaulted her was feeling very triggering, and it turned out they were a lot older. So I said, "Look, could we try something? We seem like we're a little bit stuck here. Would it be okay?" Notice asking for consent always. If we just kind of float back in time and see if anything else comes up that feels related to this idea of this is my fault and I don't deserve help, right? And she was like, okay. She said, I think it might have something to do with some family stuff. I said, I think it might as well. And we'll just see where this goes. We can always dial it back. And I was just like, let's safety first. And so I said, when do you remember first learning this? And that felt, even as I asked that question, I could see almost like a light bulb go off in her head. She's like, oh yeah, this is connected. So we did the float back. She came up with a few memories that were related to like physical abuse from her dad. And then we really honed in on one that was, and again, I'm going to be very general about the details because I don't want to reveal any identity of clients. Like, she settled on one of her dad and her being hit by him and other people being in the other part of the house, but especially her mother not coming to help her. And then feeling like no one was going to protect her, and her dad was really hurting her physically. It was not a sexual assault. I want to be clear that the father was not sexually abusing her, but he was physically abusing her. And that's relevant because the age of the person who assaulted her was the same age as her dad was in about this time of the memory. And her dad was saying to her in this memory, like that he had to do this. It was her fault. She deserves it. Right. And as we settled on that, again, the light bulb kind of went off. She started making lots of connections to the assault that she didn't realize, you know, were there. And it was, I could tell it really felt illuminating to her and supportive. And then we found out that the age of the memory was her at 8 years old. I was like, let's try a parts work interweave. So I had her adult self. This was while we were reprocessing that particular memory of this 8 year assault when she was 8 years old, the abuse from her father. I had her adult self intervene with the 8 year old, tell her what she needed to hear, do what she needed to do, which was take her out, tell her that it was not her fault, tell her about how, you know, all the things that she's learned about her dad since. And also said, you know, mom should have protected you. I asked her, what else does this 8 year old need? She needed a hug. She needed to be taken to get ice cream. So we did this whole parts work interweave. And then the SUD dropped to a 3 of that memory of the abuse from the father, right? When she was 8. And then we checked back in with the target initial memory of the assault, the rape, and it was down to a 4 from an 8 for that one point of disturbance that we're doing. We did not get the SUD of the attack from her father all the way down to a 0. At some point she was like, I think I'm good with this for now. And I was like, okay, cool. So we contained it. And then I said to her, how would you feel about going back to the memory that we were working on? And she said, okay. And that's when we saw that drop down. So just a reminder from RTEP, like the goal isn't always to get every memory down to 0, the SUD down to 0. If you can, awesome. But because we're working with recent stuff and we're trying, you know, we have a certain amount of time, you're going to kind of play around with, does this feel settled enough for right now? Do you feel like you need to do more? It's always a balance, and you use your clinical judgment along with the input from the client about what feels appropriate. So that's what I was doing there with her. We didn't get either one all the way to 0, and we still have more work. This is someone I'm going to meet with again. We still have more work to do. We want to get that point of disturbance lower than a 4, but I think we made good progress, and I'll be interested when I check in with her and see where both of those memories are, what's happened in the intervening time. My expectation is that maybe the SUD on the part of the rape memory that we were working on could be even lower than a 4, but we'll see. So just an example there of something where I really did some EMD big R, right? I didn't just stay within the limits of RTEP, and you know, what that can do, what that can accomplish, how you might do it, and always making sure that you're staying really, really connected to safety, autonomy, and helping the client feel like they're in control as much as possible. So I'm sure there's more to say about that, but as you all know, I am in the throes of like finishing my dissertation. It's literally due in 3 days. So, you know, doing what I can to get the podcast out there for you all, talk about something that I think will be of interest, but I'm super excited to start, you know, really putting more attention back on the podcast once this dissertation thingy is out of the way, and giving you guys even more tips and tricks and quality content that I think is supportive for you in your intensive journey. But I hope that felt helpful. You got a couple of tips. So as always, you can always reach out to me if you have questions or you're interested in EMDR consultation, if you're interested in working with me in any capacity to get your own intensives package and your practice up and running. Please follow me on Instagram at FutureTemplateParent for lots of intensives content. My website is www.futuretemplateparent.com. Please get there, get on my email list. The way to get on my email list is to sign up for my 8-page free guide to implementing intensives in your practice. Once you put in your email address for that, you'll get that, I think, very helpful document. And then you'll also be on my email list and you'll receive updates about everything that I'm doing. Thank you, everyone, as always, for listening. I hope you all have a great week and get out there and start enjoying this spring weather that's finally coming. And I will talk to you next week. Take care, everyone. All the best to you. Thanks so much for listening, as always.
Thank you for listening to the Future Template Parent Podcast. I hope you've learned something that can help you move from feeling overwhelmed to energized about your practice and your personal life. You don't have to choose one over the other. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. And please share it with another EMDR therapist who would benefit from hearing this episode. Each review helps us get the message out about how offering EMDR intensives can liberate your practice. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app so you don't miss a single episode. See you next week.